You are listening to Podski Wee Wee, a proud member of the Canadian Football Podcast Network.
Over the middle, caught Saunders, Jalen Saunders, touchdown.
Harris to the end zone.
Mazzoli chased down, end zone, touchdown, Luke Tasker. Into tight traffic, this looks like it's picked, it is picked by Richard Leonard.
On second down, Mazzoli looks for Banks in deep, and Banks makes the catch, touchdown. Beats two Ottawa defenders of the football, Pruno and Rowe. And Banks has his second touchdown catch of the game.
Welcome to Podski Wee Wee. I'm Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham.
Mike, new year, new show. How was your holidays, buddy, before we get started on talking about the plethora of Ticats and CFL news? How was your Christmas? How was your New Year's? How was the break away from the show? Did you have a good time?
I had a good time. I had the 24th, 25th, and 26th off, so you know I was happy with that. I spent some time with my mother, who came down, spent Christmas with me, so that was a good time. Didn't do too much on New Year's because they had to work New Year's Day at 7, but you know that's all right. I'm getting old and wrinkly, so it's not a big deal that I didn't go out on New Year's. But how was yours, bud?
Mine was pretty good. Same with you. Very quiet New Year's. I've never really been a big New Year's guy to begin with. Everyone knows. Been pretty open about it. I'm not a very social person. I like to keep a low profile, so New Year's was never really my bag. Christmas was Christmas. I got a 7-year-old nephew, so Christmas is always exciting and fun when you got kids around. CFL-wise, did you get any CFL stuff for Christmas? I got a sweet pair of Ticats slippers to replace my old ones, which were beaten up and had a hole through them. My nephew and my brother got me those, so that was pretty sweet. What about you? Any CFL stuff under your Christmas tree?
I got season tickets to the Eskimos, actually.
Ooh, that's
yeah, so I was pretty happy with that. I just got to figure out how I'm going to get to most of the games. You know, if I miss one or two, that's all right. But I want to get to the majority of them, so I got to book that time off of work post-haste.
So you'll be in the stands week two when the Ticats roll through to play the Eskies, eh?
Oh, you betcha. I'm planning on going to Calgary. I already booked the time off for the first week of the season when the Ticats come to face the Stampeders, which, you know, maybe I'll turn around their luck if I'm there.
Jeez, first month of the season, you're going to see more Ticats games than I will, and I live in the goddamn Hampton City. Jeez.
Yeah, I know. I know, right? I'm excited.
You,
I'm excited,
look
buddy.
At you. Look at you. Okay, before we really get into this, there's a bit of a controversy after our last show regarding you, sir. You made a comparison between Jalen Saunders and Brandon Banks back when we assumed that Brandon Banks was not coming back to the Ticats. We obviously know that was wrong, so we'll talk about that in a little bit. But you basically said that you thought that if they lost Banks, it's okay because they have Jalen Saunders. And man, oh man, you kind of took it on the chin over that little piece of analysis on your part. Do you want to defend yourself here?
I think that if Banks left, Saunders could step into his role and do a damn fine job. He was a rookie last year in the league and put up great numbers for a rookie. He has the speed, maybe even faster than Banks at this point, because Banks is getting up there at around age 30. Saunders is a younger cat. So I still believe that if Banks left, Saunders could do a tremendous job filling his void.
I agree with you, dude. Let's not forget, Jalen Saunders actually led this team in receiving last year. So it's not like this kid is someone who came up here, had a few good games, and kind of disappeared. He was probably their best receiver, maybe outside of Luke Tasker, but I think you could make an argument that Saunders was the team's best receiver the entire season. So I don't think you're way off base on that one. But the next thing you kind of took it on the chin for, you tweeted out something about getting rid of the Rouge. And right, man, you might as well have just said, let's go to four downs, let's do 100 yards, and let's put the goalposts in the front, because man, oh man, when you want to mess with any of the rules, the Rouge, which, let's be honest, is maybe the silliest one the CFL does have, but if you talk about getting rid of it, the hounds of justice come flying at you and tell you you're not being Canadian. So how did you feel about taking some heat for that one, buddy?
It was all right. I was a little bit bored at the time, and I was like, this will get some reactions. And I was like, but I do believe what I tweeted though. But then when I started getting reactions, I'm like, I don't like this. I'm not very good at confrontations. but I stand by my statement. I don't think it's necessary. I think that if there was missed field goals, you'd still have returners bringing the ball out of the end zone. Because in my mind, I think they're not thinking, hey, oh my God, we're going to give up a single point. They're thinking, hey, look at all these fat bodies on the field. I can run past these guys and get a touchdown for my team. That's what I believe they're thinking in their heads. So I don't think there would be a dramatic drop off in those exciting return plays. So to me, the Rouge is a thing of the past. I think we should get rid of it. I know it won't happen, but that's just my opinion.
I think there are ways to tweak the Rouge rule, and we won't get into it now. Maybe one week when we don't
eliminate it.
So, okay, you want to eliminate it. I think there's a tweak that can happen that could satisfy a lot of parties, but we won't get into it now simply because there's just so much news, especially Ticats related, that we have to talk about that occurred since the last time we sat down. So we'll park this one for a discussion another day when maybe we have a little less to talk about. But it was a rough few weeks for you with the hot takes, and I just thought it was funny how much crap you took. But if you're ready, let's roll into the actual news that we have to talk about. And I guess we'll start with Zach Collaros is no longer a member of the Hamilton Tiger Cats. The team traded him to the Saskatchewan Rough Riders for the 10th overall pick in the upcoming draft. This was both surprising and unsurprising, and I've said this a lot recently when it comes to moves the Ticats have made. It's surprising in the fact that, if you remember 4 years ago, this guy was going to be the guy. He was going to be finally, the Ticats have a young quarterback that they're going to have for the next 10 to 12 years that's going to take them to the promised land, and it started off looking so good. They get to the Grey Cup his first year. We all know what happened in 2015. We don't need to rehash that here, but in that respect, thinking back all those years, it's really shocking that Zach Collaros is no longer a member of the Hamilton Tiger Cats, but at the same time, not very shocking. You know what I mean? Because he had been benched for Jeremiah Mazzoli last year. He had a large salary. It looked like he needed to start over. Now, I wrote a piece on 3Down that said I think this deal that the Ticats made is good for everyone involved. I think it's good for Hamilton. I think it's good for Saskatchewan. I think it's good for Zach Collaros. I think it's good for Jeremiah Mazzoli. So, Mike, let's get your opinion on this. What did you think when you first heard the deal, and what do you think? Do you think this was a good deal for the Ticats, or what are your kind of overall thoughts on Zach Collaros now being a member of the Saskatchewan Rough Riders?
My first reaction to it was I was a bit surprised. Not that it got traded or that it was to Saskatchewan, but you just think, like you said, when this guy signed, I mean, this was the savior of the Ticats, the future of the Ticats. Same with Ken Austin. So if we go back in the Wayback Machine, I could never picture Zach Collaros getting traded from this team. It's just crazy to think about when he played so well in a couple years with the Ticats. But I'd have to agree with you that I think it's good for all parties involved. Collaros gets a new environment, a new team, a competitive team. Not that we're not going to be competitive this year, but I think it's very good for Zach to get out of that, to get off the Ticats team and start over again, because I still believe that he can be an elite quarterback in this league. I think it's good for the Ticats because they've made their decision. We all knew that this was going to happen eventually. They made a decision. They're going with Mazzoli and maybe someone else, but we'll get into that a little bit later. So, yeah, I think it's good for the Riders. I think it's good for the Ticats. I think it's good for Mazzoli and Collaros. I totally agree with your article.
Yeah, like the Cats get the 10th overall pick in the draft, and they have 4 picks in the top 15, 5 in the top 20 in this upcoming draft. That's a chance to replenish a lot of Canadian talent, or it's a chance to package a couple of those players, a couple of those picks for players, or maybe move up. Like the Ticats, the early part of the draft, the Ticats basically control the board. The Riders, they get their quarterback. And I'm with you. I think Zach Collaros can still be a very good to great quarterback in this league. I think he just needed a fresh start. He's going to get that in Saskatchewan. There's a lot of weapons on that offense. If they get Daron Carter back, and you got Collaros throwing to guys like Daron Carter, Pecari Grant, Caleb Hawley, Naaman Roosevelt, like that's a murderer's row of receivers that he's going to be thrown to there. Like I think it's good for him. And you bring up Jeremiah Mazzoli, and this is now his team. And the stuff going on with Johnny Football, we'll talk about in a bit, like you mentioned, but this is Jeremiah Mazzoli's team, and that solidifies that position. There's no ambiguity now going into OTAs and training camp and into the season. We know Jeremiah Mazzoli is going to be the starting quarterback for this football team. There just doesn't seem to be any downside. Yeah, I know fans are ticked that Collaros was gone because they thought, man, what if he would have got a shot in this offense? they're kind of mad, I've seen, about just getting a draft pick, but getting the 10th overall draft pick is that's nothing to sneeze at. They're going to get who they think is at minimum the 10th best player in this draft. That's pretty darn good. And I've been told from people that know this is a fairly deep draft. So to have a lot of picks in this draft is actually a really good thing. So I just feel like for all parties involved, it was the right thing to do for Caleros. Get him a chance to go start somewhere new. Don't hamstring him to having to be here or forcing him to renegotiate or cutting him. Ticats got something for a guy they probably were going to release in a month anyway. Like, they shed $500,000 plus worth of salary off the cap. Like, there just seems to be no downside here. Even if Caleros goes out to Saskatchewan, becomes the guy we thought he would be here, tears it up, say he wins an MOP, wins a Grey Cup or two, and the Cats don't, I still think this was the best move for the franchise, because whatever Caleros becomes, he wasn't going to become that here, and I think that's kind of what fans need to understand. He wasn't getting the shot to become the man again. So cut ties, get something for him. Now we all move on.
Yep. Like, no matter what, if you're a fan, no matter what you think, it doesn't matter, because the people in charge have already made that decision. So if you're a Zach Caleros fan, then, you know, go cheer for Zach Caleros in Saskatchewan.
We are.
If you're a Hamilton.
I don't. Sorry to cut you off, but I believe you and I would consider ourselves Zach Caleros fans. I'm not going to. I hope he is successful in Saskatchewan, except against the Ticats. I'm not saying you can't be a Caleros fan and a Ticat. You know what I mean? Like, you can like a player. There's tons of players around the league, and people are going to hate me for this. There's players that play for the Argos that I like. That's not going to – just because they don't play for Hamilton doesn't mean you can't like them. You're right. The ownership, the football brain trust made their decision, and if you're a Ticats fan, which I am, how many players that we have loved have we seen walk out the door, get traded, get released? It happens all the time. But we stay Ticats fans. And that's kind of like, yeah, it sucks that Caleros isn't here anymore. He might go tear it up. People talk about, oh, he's going to come back here and burn us. They're worried about him being the next Anthony
Calvillo.
If that happens, it happens. There's nothing you can do about it. But the team made the decision they thought was best. And after watching Mazzoli play last year, you kind of got to agree with him.
Yeah, and I have no problem. Like you said, we're both Caleros fans. I hope him all the best. But there's some fans out there that just freak the hell out, like tweeting at the Tiger Cats, you effing idiots, and you guys effing suck, and all this stuff about, you know, if you're that hurt over it, then go cheer for Saskatchewan. Like, it's that simple. Like, if you want to see Caleros play, and if you're that hurt over it, then there's a green team in Saskatchewan that you can cheer for.
I think the angriest I ever got over the team making a move was when they traded Arlan Bruce during the season. I remember seeing that, and I was so angry because he had played so well for this team. I saw no reason to get rid of him. There was all that stuff near the end when everyone thought he was trying to get cut or trying to get relieved, trying to get traded, whatever it was. Then they traded him for basically nothing. He goes to BC, gets another Grey Cup out of it. Like, he was still a talented player. I remember being so angry about that. That was 7 years ago. 6 years ago. I can't remember. I think it happened in 2011. So it was almost 7 years ago. I'm still a Hamilton Tiger Cats fan. Guys, it happens. We get angry, but we move on. In June, all these people pissed off about this Caleros trade are going to be in the stands cheering on Jeremiah Mazzoli. It's just the way it's going to be. You're right, Mike. It's time to move on. If you're that angry and you think the Ticats have done something ridiculous, switch the team you cheer for. It's not that big a deal. It's not life or death. It's a sport. We're here to have fun.
Yeah, they will continue on even if you don't support them. So, I mean, obviously the team doesn't want to lose fans, and I don't want that either. But, you know, you're your own person. It's your own choice. If you're that mad with the team, then you can cheer for someone else.
So people were mad about the Caleros deal, but I think the rest of the stuff we're going to talk about here, at least with the players that have inked deals, this seemed to be sort of – they came hand in hand. To cut to the chase here, the Ticats have re-signed a bunch of players, and they signed two of the biggest. They re-signed Jeremiah Mazzoli to a two-year deal. They signed Brandon Banks to a one-year deal. Just earlier today, which is Monday, they re-signed Jay Langa to a two-year deal. And there's also talk out there that they have picked up Akeem Haynes, who is not a name known to many football fans, but he was a bronze medalist at the Rio Olympics. He has shown some interest in coming to the CFL. They believe he'd be one of the fastest men in the CFL, so more speed to add to. I don't know what he would play, if he'd be a receiver, maybe return man, I don't know. But we got to talk about the big two first, because they're the big two. The Ticats get Mazzoli and Banks back. I think this with Banks especially, I think we got to stop reading into tweets because
we
spent so much damn time talking about what Brandon Banks is going to do because of the things he tweeted to CJ Gable, the things he tweeted about loyalty and winning championships. And we were sitting here at the end of last year going, I don't think he's going to be back. And then the very next time you and I sit down, he's back. And like, I think we, and I include us and I include pretty much everyone in the media, we got to stop reading these tweets, man, because it's starting to make us look really, really stupid.
Yeah, I read into them big time, and I shouldn't have done that. But it was funny to see, and there was that rumor that he wouldn't sign if Austin was still with the Ticats, and that added to the thoughts of this guy's not coming back. But he's back now. I know I said some stuff about him. If he wants to leave, then he can leave, and he was being a bit of a baby, I thought, but I'm glad to have him back. I really am. I think he showed what he could do as a receiver in the last 10 games of the season. I'm very excited to see what he can do with a full season as a starting receiver. I think he can rack up really, really good numbers in this June Jones's offense because he obviously has a lot of faith in him. So I'm happy that Banks is back, and I think he's going to do great things.
I actually really like the term of this deal. They gave him a one-year deal, and a lot of people are kind of poo-pooing that going, man, just 1 year, look at what he put up. But what if that was a bit of luck? And I'm not saying it was, but what if it was? What if all those monster numbers he put up in the tail end of the season was a bit of luck? Now this gives both Banks and the team a chance to see over a full season because it's clear Banks is going to come back being a starting receiver. He's going to get 18 games if he's healthy. Let's see what he can do. Let's see if he can take the pounding of an 18-game season at the receiver position. I think he can. I'm not doubting him at all. But if he puts up monster numbers, not only is he going to get a big payday, but the team's going to know, yes, we have to bring this guy back. He is as good as he looked. I think that's a really smart move on their part. Moving to Mazzoli, yep. What a great signing this was. Two-year deal. From what I've heard, they didn't give him a huge money, but they gave him significant, you're going to be our starter money. So I know the Johnny Manziel cloud hangs over everything, but getting this guy back who, and I dug into the numbers, he had a 15 touchdowns and 5 interceptions last year. That 3-to-1 touchdown interception ratio is ranks amongst the elite. The only person in the league last year that had a better touchdown interception ratio was Matt Nichols. He had a better TD interception ratio than Mike Riley, Ricky Ray, Willie Mitchell. You go down the list. And his interception percentage of 1.3%, which is he threw for every pass he threw, 1% of them were intercepted. Best in the league. This guy has proven, and I keep seeing people, Cass will never win a Grey Cup with Mazzoli. He's a bum. He's a flash in the pan. If you are still judging him based on what you saw in a start way back when in Calgary, I think it was 2014, when he came in when Zach Caleros got hurt, he started a game, he looked awful. If you're still judging him based on that, you haven't been paying attention. This guy has put the work in, and he's gotten better and better. This guy deserves to be a starter in this league. He has earned the right to fail, in my opinion. Two-year deal, I think it's perfect for him. Let's see what he can do. Let's get him on the field. I'm very excited about this because I think that he has the abilities, and we've seen it, to become a legit superstar quarterback in this league. That's my opinion.
Yeah, I would agree with you just based on last season. You mentioned the numbers. That's spectacular. And there was a playoff game. This quarterback, Jeremiah Mazzoli, almost led us to a Grey Cup in 2015?
Yep.
Yeah, against the Ottawa Redblacks. He had a tremendous game. I know we talked about it in the past, about how he out-dueled Henry Burris in that game. And if not for a miracle play, you know, the Ticats could have made it to the Grey Cup that year with Jeremiah Mazzoli starting in the Grey Cup. So to me, he's proven himself. He came in. We saw what he could do when he was the starter. You know, he wasn't the backup coming in for an injured Caleros. He was the starter in the second half of the season, and he put up 6 wins and really good numbers. So I'm excited he's back. I think he's the real deal, and he's going to prove a lot of people wrong next year.
Yeah, and these two moves to me have June Jones's hands written all over them. It seems like once he became the permanent head coach for this team, this feels like he walked in the office, said, Kent, these are the guys you need to have back. Get them done. And everyone freaked out when the season ended, and you saw some teams re-sign their players, and the Cats were doing nothing. You had people go, man, Hamilton's not signing anyone. What's going on? We're going to lose all our players. The new year flips over, and we're what? We got, what, maybe 4 or 5 days into the new year, and all of a sudden, all the big guns, Caleros gets traded, Mazzoli gets signed, Banks gets signed. The Ticats had no money to sign these guys in December. So I hope when this year comes to a close, the Grey Cup ends this November, and we get into that December period where some players are being signed but other teams aren't doing anything, people remember that if you just wait a few weeks till the calendar turns, that's when you're going to see a lot of players re-up, because teams don't have salary cap space to be paid, especially if, when the Ticats had the highest paid player in the league on their roster. You don't have a ton of wiggle room to re-sign guys that much earlier than prior to the new year when the cap resets. So let's just practice some patience next year and not go overboard on December 3rd when Hamilton hasn't re-signed any of their players, because by January 3rd, they may have re-signed a half dozen. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, the Ticats fans like to panic, don't they?
Patience is not something that Ticats fans have an abundance of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, God love them. I mean, they are hardcore fans, and we have a great fan base, and they truly, truly care about this team. So I'll let that little bit of panic, I'll set it to the side and let that one go.
Oh, for sure. But I just want to remind everyone, in December, just don't worry. If no one's signed by Christmas, it doesn't mean they won't be signed before the middle of January. So just take her easy. Show that passion, but just don't worry. It's not until day free agency opens and a guy's not signed, that's when you worry if a guy's going to leave. Before then, you can't worry about it.
I'm excited about this offense next year, just thinking about it. You know, I looked into June Jones's past, his past offenses in Hawaii and SMU, especially in Hawaii. I mean, if they could have half the production of what he had in Hawaii, I know it's college and this is the professional ranks, but I'm expecting a high tempo, high scoring offense next year, and I will accept nothing more.
Okay. All right.
Or nothing
buddy.
Less. Yeah. Nothing less.
Yeah, better. Nothing less. That's what I thought you meant. Okay, before we move on to Johnny Manziel, I want to talk about the Jay Langa deal. This is a special teams guy, kind of replaced Mark Beswick. He's kind of in that Mark Beswick role. He's a guy that's not going to get headlines for his play. He's capable enough to go in at safety if need be, if someone like Courtney Steven goes down or Mike Daly goes down. But this is just a really good – you gotta lock up these core special teamers. The Ticats have lost a few of these guys over the year, and Langa's a Toronto guy. And I think everyone should probably remember back when Rob Ford, who was former mayor of Toronto, died. Rob Ford used to coach football. He coached Jay Langa in high school. So I thought maybe there was a chance that he was going to test free agency and head back home, but he inks a two-year deal with the Cats. I like seeing these glue guys come back, because we saw when the Ticats lost a bunch of their special teams guys a couple years ago, the special teams unit kind of floundered a little bit. And to get these guys back so that there's some continuity in that unit, I think that's only a good thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, these guys are not big names, but they're very important. Like you said, we saw a big drop off in the special teams productivity, and that maybe that was a part of why Banks's productivity dropped off a bit, because he didn't have those experienced guys on the special teams to block for him. So to get someone back that's a special teams demon is a great thing.
The Haynes signing is kind of neat too, simply because how often do you see an Olympic sprinter, that is, try to make the transition to football? Like, I'm sure it's happened in the past. I remember all those times, probably going back to 2012, people were saying, man, Usain Bolt should try football because of how fast he is. He could be a great returner or wide receiver. But now we're going to get the chance to see this kid. I don't know what he's going to do. I know he does have a football background. He played football, I believe, in high school, so he's not completely foreign to the game. But I don't know. This is kind of a weird signing, and one that should probably get a lot of press attention once he gets to training camp, don't you think?
Yeah, it's very interesting. I remember a rumor way back in the day that Donovan Bailey was interested in signing with the Argonauts or something like that. I don't know if there's any truth to that or not. I just remember hearing about it. But yeah, I guess he did play a little bit of football back in the day. Obviously, he's fast, so he has that going for him. But I think it's a project. Maybe they see something in him. I'm not sure. But I'll be interested to see how he does, if he makes the team or if he's just cut relatively quickly.
I guess we'll have to wait and see. Okay, let's just rip the Band-Aid off, Mike. It's time to do it. The Johnny Manziel saga rolls on. It really looked like the end was near a few weeks ago when the league said the Ticats could sign him. And then this past Sunday, the Ticats publicly stated they had offered him a contract. And you're thinking, okay. And I've heard it was for 2 years and it was above the league minimum. You're thinking, all right, that sounds about on par with what it's kind of NFL flameouts get when they come to the CFL to try to revive their careers. And then what, 10 minutes, 15 minutes before we decided we were going to record today's episode. His agent, Eric Burkhart, released a statement. It was posted on Facebook by NFL insider Ian Rapoport. This tells you, Ian Rapoport's big name in NFL media circles. This tells you kind of how deep this has penetrated the American psyche. Johnny Football information is something that they just crave. It's a long, sort of long-winded statement, so I won't read it all, but I will read the pertinent part, which is the final paragraph, and I'll read it in its entirety, and then you and I could discuss just what the hell is going on, man. So Burkhart states, as Hamilton has announced, and per the aforementioned restrictive rule requirements, earlier in the statement, Burkhart said that the CFL's rules were archaic when it comes to sort of the negotiation list. Anyway, they sent us a placeholder contract in order to maintain Johnny's rights and allow us adequate time to negotiate a deal. During our diligence process and at my request, Hamilton also graciously gave me permission to discuss potential trade options with at least one other club. Johnny and I met with those executives in Texas to discuss their organization and thoughts on Johnny's market and value around the CFL. However, due to Johnny's strong relationship with Coach Jones and Hamilton executive Kent Austin, we've made the decision to deal exclusively with Hamilton and give them until January 31st to work out a fair deal to make him their quarterback, so that there will not be any ambiguity in regards to financial expectations, and so the public understands how seriously Johnny is considering the move. I will tell you that we believe fair deal, in quotes, means on par with what Hamilton has paid their QB in recent years, despite not having much on-field success. If we cannot reach a deal with Hamilton by this date, we will turn our focus to several other professional options readily available to us. What in the blue hell is going on here, Mike?
Well, you know, it's Johnny freaking Football. I mean, his last name is Football. So he wants a lot of money, I guess. Well, you know, in CFL terms, I'm not sure what they're talking about with getting paid, like Hamilton's quarterbacks in recent years. Like, are they talking about the starting quarterback? Because if they're talking about the starting quarterback, we have a serious problem here. Johnny Football, Johnny Manziel, is not getting $500,000 to play football in the CFL. He just hasn't proven anything yet. So if he thinks that's what he's going to get, he is sadly mistaken, because there's no way the Tiger Cats offer him up that kind of money.
And who are Manziel's representatives? Who is Burkhart to say that they are giving the Tiger Cats a deadline to sign Manziel? The Ticats, now having offered Johnny Manziel a contract in and around January 7th, now get to retain his rights for another year. That means if this January 31st deadline can come and go as it pleases, the Ticats will have 11 more months where Manziel will have to sit on his duff and collect dust. That's another year of him out of football. And if he thinks this sort of demands are going to endear him to NFL teams, he's probably sorely mistaken. Now, I don't want to throw this all on Manziel's shoulders. This could very easily be his agent being blustery, and it's a public declaration. So very clearly, this is him trying to show that he's going to make the best deal possible for his player. But at the same time, they are not in a position to be making demands. They're just not.
No, I mean, who else is going to sign him? There's not an NFL team that's lining up. Maybe there's another team in the CFL who would pay him a little bit more, but I'm sure the Ticats are going to want quite a bit for his rights. Maybe he's waiting for the XFL to start up and he can sign with them, but I don't know.
Well, that's what I was thinking. Like, he says other professional opportunities. Well, the NFL's done. This would put the CFL out to pasture. XFL or whatever they decide to call it could come back, but they didn't pay their players very much initially. They had the $1 million game, which was their championship game, and they split that pot amongst all the players on the team. They weren't paying guys $500,000 a year to play in the XFL. Arena ball, he's not going to make that much. Like, where exactly is he going to play professionally that is going to give him – people bash the CFL and all that stuff. And the NFL is the highest paid players in the league. The CFL are the second highest paid players in the world when it comes to professional football. If he thinks he's going to go somewhere else and make that kind of money, I'd love to know where he's going. To be honest, is he going to pull a LeVar Ball and go over to Lithuania and start his own basketball league? And like, what the hell is he supposed to do? Like, where is he getting this money from if he's not getting it from the CFL? Because he sure as hell isn't getting it from the NFL.
No, it's not just about the money either. It's he's going to get looks in the CFL. He's not going to get as many looks if he's playing in the Lithuania Football League or the Arena League. The Arena League at one point was about on par with pay with the CFL, I'm pretty sure. I'm not positive about that, but that's, it's not like that anymore. Players don't get paid a lot at all, like barely anything in the Arena Football League, as far as I'm concerned, as far as I know. So unless they're talking about different options, you know, different career in, I don't know what, coaching, or he doesn't seem like the coaching type to me, or broadcasting. I'm not sure, but if he wants to eventually get back to the NFL, the CFL is the best route, like bar none.
This is the first time that I have ever really been sort of sour on the idea of him coming up here. I was kind of all on board with this. Look, the kid wants a second chance. Let's give him a second chance. The CFL is full of guys who are up here for second chances. He wants to use it for a springboard to the NFL. Let him do that. Every single American player who comes up here is looking to springboard back in the NFL, with the rare few exceptions. Doug Flutie came up here and played up here for 8 years and used that as a springboard to the NFL when he was in his late 30s. Guys want to, American players don't dream of winning Grey Cups. They dream of winning Super Bowls. They dream of playing in the NFL. We all get that. I have no problems with that whatsoever. But now there seems to be this arrogance coming from his camp. And again, I don't want to say it's coming from him, because this was not a statement from Johnny Manziel. This was a statement from his agent. And agents don't always necessarily have their client's best interest at heart. They sometimes are looking themselves to get paid. If an agent gets 3 or 4%.
Sometimes.
Yeah. But think about it. If this guy's going to get 3 or 4% on a $70,000, $80,000 deal, or if he's looking to get 3 or 4% off of a $500,000 deal, he's getting a much bigger payday on the ladder. So this could just be bluster. This could just be, it's again, public declarations. But for the first time, because of the ultimatums and sort of the threatening nature of this press release, this is really the first time that I look at this and I say, maybe this isn't worth the headache. He mentions in it that they had a chance to talk to another CFL team. You look around the league, that clearly had to be Montreal. And, I don't like to speculate, but who the hell else is digging into this? We've already heard Ed Hervey say he wouldn't bring him in no matter what. He's not going to Calgary. He's not going to Saskatchewan. He's not going to Edmonton. He's not going to Winnipeg. He's not going to Toronto.
Ottawa.
He's not going to – like, there's only 9 teams. So unless Johnny Manziel is planning on starting – unless he's in the bidding process to bring that team to Atlantic Canada, the only other option would be Montreal. And clearly, when talking to Montreal, maybe they got a sense that he's worth more than what the Tiger – like, I don't know. But this is just – It's starting to seem a little unseemly, and I'm starting to kind of – I know a lot of people will say, well, I was on board with not bringing him up here to begin with. I wasn't, and now this kind of puts me on that side where it's like maybe he's not worth the hassle.
Yeah, and I don't have a problem. Like, he doesn't have to take the first deal that's offered to him, but if the wording in the press release, it sounds like he wants to be paid like Zach Claris was. And that's just not a possibility. And the Montreal thing, there's a ties in with Mike Sherman. There's some tie in. I'm not sure the exact details, but him and Manziel, he was maybe recruited by him or something like that. But yeah, Montreal is the only destination that I could see where they would give him the money he wanted, or close to the money he wanted. Because number one, I'm sure Sherman wants him to play for his team. Number two, they're having a little bit of issues in Montreal with attendance and overall attraction to the Alouettes. And I can guarantee you that would make a big splash in Montreal. So if it's not in Hamilton, it's probably going to be in Montreal if they trade the rights.
Yeah, but like you said earlier, if they trade the rights, they're going to be asking for a lot. They didn't go through this process, and Ken Austin said it himself. We didn't go through all this process to allow an asset to just walk out the door. So we knew that they were going to offer him a contract no matter what it was, and we knew that was definitely going to happen. So there's no real news there. But if they're going to trade in Montreal after doing all of this work, it's going to have to be something significant. And if you look at Montreal's roster, there's not a ton of players on there that anyone really wants. They have the first overall pick in the draft, but they've traded a first-round pick for a quarterback before, and that didn't really work out. And is that really enough to lure the Ticats to get rid of Johnny? Like, there's just – I don't know if Montreal has what it takes to get this guy out of Hamilton, and if he's going to play hardball or his agent's going to play hardball, this guy might be sitting on the old bench down in Texas for another year, and that's another year wasted of his career and another year that he doesn't have a chance to get back to the NFL. So – I don't know, man. If he's not willing to come up here and play ball, and I get you're right when you said don't take the first deal offered to you. Totally agree. Negotiate. That the reason they offered him a contract was so they could continue to negotiate. And Johnny Manziel was never getting league minimum. That's patently ridiculous. That wasn't going to happen. Vince Young, who was 6 years retired, didn't get league minimum when he came up here last year to play for the Riders. So guys, quarterbacks do not come up here for league minimum. It's just the way it is. Backup quarterbacks do not make league minimum. It's just the way it is. That was never going to happen. So if they're negotiating, fine. But if he thinks he's going to get Zach Caleros money, then that's insane. And if that's the case, they should have just kept Zach Caleros. If you're going to pay a quarterback $500,000 and it's not going to be your starter, you might as well have had the guy who has CFL experience over the guy who's got none.
Yeah, absolutely. It just it's very frustrating because we just want this thing to be over with. Either sign or don't sign. Come here or don't. If you want an opportunity in football again, you don't have to take the first offer, but you're not going to be the highest paid player in the league. That's a definite.
Let's move on to some CFL news. You mentioned Mike Sherman, and that was kind of the shocker. A few days before Christmas, the Owls announced their new head coach, and it was Mike Sherman, former Packers and Texas A&M head coach. You mentioned his ties to Johnny Manziel. You're right. He did recruit him. He actually flipped his recruitment, Johnny Manziel's recruitment, from Oregon to Texas A&M. But Sherman was fired after the 2011 season. Manziel became the starter in 2012, and that's when he won the Heisman Trophy. But yeah, Sherman coached the Packers from 2000 to 2005. And he, as I said, he led the Texas A&M Aggies from 2008 to 2011. And he was also the GM of the Packers during his time in Green Bay. So, Mike, is this the guy that can finally turn the Owls around?
That's a good question. And to be honest with you, I have no freaking idea. Because at this point in time, they have no quarterback. So without a quarterback, you're in serious trouble in the CFL. And with all his experience and all of that, you know, you just never know. He could be a Mark Trestman or he could be a Bart Andrews. So, yeah, I really, really don't know. I just hope for the Montreal Alouettes' sake that they stick with this guy and give him a bit of a tenure, because the revolving door of coaches and GMs in Montreal has to stop if they want any sustained success.
Yeah, they need to give this guy time. And I'm skeptical of his ability to come up here and be the next Mark Trestman. I don't think he'll be the next Bart Andrus, because I think that was a guy who just didn't have a goddamn clue. I think Sherman does. I think Sherman will take this seriously. But everyone wants to talk about how great he was in Green Bay and how and all that stuff. And, man, he's got all this NFL experience. But this guy had Brett Favre in his prime, or at least the tail end of his prime. And they never got to even an NFC championship game. And when you have Brett Favre from 2000-2005, when he's still one of the best quarterbacks in the game, a little older, but still one of the best, to not get to a conference title game seems like a massive failure. There's a reason he was fired after the 2005 season, and he didn't win enough. And I think he's a good coach, but I think people are really putting too much emphasis on his time, both the Packers and with Texas A&M, because he didn't really do much with them either. But those are, you know, obviously the Packers, that's a huge coaching position, and Texas A&M is a pretty big one too. But I don't know, man. I have my doubts that he can be the guy to get this turned around, but even if he doesn't, they have to give him more than like seven games, or else this is just like you said, the revolving door of coaches. It's gotta end. And they gave him, I think, a 3-year deal. Hopefully, they have enough faith in him to at least let him see 2 years of that, because you're not going to turn this around. And you say they have no quarterbacks, but man, they got Darian Durant and Drew Willey. The Riders in 2013 won with those guys, as I've been told numerous frickin' times. So clearly, you can win with them in 2018, right? Yeah, exactly.
I'd rather have Willie starting than Darian Durant. And, you know, I've been hard on Durant, but he just – and I'm sure he's a great person, but last year was his downfall as far as I'm concerned as a starting quarterback, because he just did not perform.
So if to put you on the spot, if I was to ask you where you think the Owls will finish in 2018, and obviously we're 6 months away from the start of the season, you got them in fourth place, right?
Yeah, last in the East, yep.
Yeah, I don't think this move is going to automatically. Now, they could make some moves, bring some players in, but I think they're at least 2 years minimum away from really sort of writing that ship, because that's an old roster.
Right. I was just going to say that they have to get younger, and that doesn't happen overnight. So I think they got a rebuild ahead of them.
I think they do too. Not rebuilding are the defending Grey Cup champions, although maybe they're reloading. Another horse on the QB carousel stopped recently, the Argos inking former Edmonton quarterback James Franklin to a 2-year deal. We all remember when the Argos traded for Franklin's rights back in early December, and now they have who they hope will be their QB of the future locked up for the next two seasons. So what do you think of the deal, Mike? Do you think Franklin can be the superstar that a lot of people envision? And what do you think this means for the future of one Mr. Richard Ray?
I think Franklin can be a superstar. We've seen limited action from him, but when he's gotten in there, he's produced at a very high level. It hasn't been much, but and I don't like to jump on the, you know, quarterback that's coming up, because usually if I think he's going to be great, he crashes into oblivion pretty quickly. But
oh, you mean the Stephen Giles corollary, the one that we both jumped on?
yes, that is one. Yeah, it's a very good example.
Our friendship is almost entirely predicated on our belief and then astoundment that he sucked in Stephen Giles. Yeah. That's pretty much where you and I kind of came together, was the old one-eyed wombat. That's what brought us together. We would not be doing this show without Stephen Giles. Yeah. We did something
right. We should have him on the show.
Just thank him. Hey, Stephen, thank you. You brought me and Mike together. Yeah. Okay, see you later.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, I think James Franklin is different. I'm going to put it on the record right now. I think that this is a great move by the Argonauts. It secures their future for at least the next 2 years. And I have no idea what Ricky Ray is going to do. If I had to bet, I would say he's going to retire. I just think that he has nothing really left to prove. He's won 4 championships as a starter. You know, he's had all the records and all that stuff. He's done it all. So I could see him looking at the signing and saying, hey, maybe I'll step aside, get into coaching, and let this kid do his thing.
Now, I have been told by a very reliable person that this deal with Franklin had absolutely nothing to do with Ricky Ray. They don't know what Ray's planning on doing. They didn't ask, but they had to make a move. If Ray doesn't come back and they didn't get Franklin signed, and say he walked to another team in February after they had traded a player to get him, they would have looked really, really bad, and they would have been at square one with quarterbacks, and you just don't want that. I've always been kind of, not skeptical is the wrong word, but everyone was always so high on Franklin, and I watched him play and it looks like he has all the tools, but it was always to me like, where does he land, and will he have a system in place that will be able to maximize his skill set? And then he goes to Toronto, and much like Stephen Giles before him, I go, that's a great move, a great place for him to be, with Trestman, with those weapons that they have on offense, with James Wilder and SJ Green. I know he's a free agent, but I can't imagine they're not going to bring him back in some capacity. There's a lot for him to work with there, and if Ray does decide to hang him up and Franklin gets the keys to the franchise, the Argos could be very good for a very long time. I'll take a wait-and-see approach. I won't say he's going to be a superstar, but I think if he doesn't, it's due to his own shortcomings, and that might sound a little harsh. I don't mean it to, because all the things around him to be successful are there. So this kid could be pretty darn good for the Argos, which would be pretty darn bad for us as Ticats fans.
Yeah, like I see the potential there. I think there is a chance that the offense could be much more potent with James Franklin behind center compared to Ricky Ray. And Ricky Ray's an all-time great. But I just think with the mobility there, and, you know, you have the dual, you have James Wilder out of the backfield, and then James Franklin can run the ball too. He has a good arm. So there's a lot of potential there for the Argonauts to really build their franchise over, you know, however long they can keep this guy in double blue.
And if he becomes sort of, and I know we talk about off-field stuff with the Argos way too frequently, but if he becomes that superstar player, he's a marketable guy. You saw his press conference. He's very affable, very well-spoken. Like, this is a guy that you could build a marketing platform around. And now with MLSE there and the things that they can do marketing-wise, this guy could be the face of Toronto sports if he becomes. And that's thinking real big, but like, he's a handsome dude. He's a very well-spoken dude. He's a young dude. If this guy becomes the franchise quarterback and becomes, you know, perennial MOP candidate, the Argos are always in the discussion for winning the Grey Cup. He could be one of the big faces of Toronto sports. And that's not something that the Argos can bristle at.
Yeah. The Argos have some very marketable players on their team right now. You know, Franklin, James Wilder, the season that he had last year, I mean, he's a beast. SJ Green, just amazing player. So there's some potential there for the Argonauts to really market these players and maybe get some traction in that city.
Traction is the word I would use too. It looks like they're finally going to be able to gain some traction. That's a good thing for the CFL as a whole, but God, praising the Argos just feels icky. So let's move on to the other football team in Toronto, or at least the other football program. I guess York's there too, but yeah, I mean, no one goes to York. Anyway, U of T, my alma mater, after an exhaustive search, That
I went to York. No, just joking.
I've been spending almost 3 years bashing York. It'd be kind of funny if you're like, I went to York, yeah. Dude. I've just been quiet about this. You got to shut the hell up about York. Anyway, U of T went through a huge coaching search. They courted Steph Potasik, former Mac and Ticats coach, and they finally found their man to head up their football program. And it's another former Ticats assistant, longtime CFL defensive coordinator Greg Marshall. Not the Greg Marshall that coaches Western that just won the Vanier Cup, unfortunately. The Greg Marshall that was the D coordinator for the Ticats and the Argos, and he was a head coach with the Riders. And I know when this happened, Riders fans were like, oh, you can't be too happy about that. And I was kind of excited. Greg Marshall's a darn good football coach. So Rider fans might bristle at that notion, but I think he's a good coach. I think he's got a big job ahead of him in getting this Blues program back to prominence. But we don't really have to talk about what this means for U Sports or anything like that. But like, this is a pretty big hire. Right, Mike? Like, to lure a longtime CFL coach to the college ranks is not really something that we should just kind of summarily dismiss. This is a big name in CFL circles, and for him to take over a Canadian university program, I think it's a pretty big deal.
Yeah, to me, it shows that the university, the college program, the football program is looking to really step up its game. You know, they've been dreadful for the longest time, as you know, and they're putting in some effort, man. You got to be happy with that. They signed a big name in CFL circles, and you know, he has a ton of experience. I don't see the downfall in this. They can't get any worse, right?
No, they could not get any worse. They have the record for futility, longest without winning a game. I believe the most wins they've had in a season in like 20 something years was 4. They haven't made the playoffs in forever. They can't, you're right, they can't go any further down. And to get a guy like this, he's got contacts around the country from all his various coaching stops. Like, yeah, maybe he wasn't a super success in Saskatchewan when he was the head coach there, but he's had a pretty good run as a defensive coordinator, the bend but don't break defense. That can work in college football a lot more than I think it can work in the pros. Like, I don't know. Yeah. I'm excited by, as a U of T guy, I'm excited by this. If it works out, I'm just looking for them to get a playoff game. That's all I care about. I will be so happy if this team could just make the bloody playoffs. I'd be like Bills fans were this past weekend when their team finally made the playoffs after 17 years. That would be me if U of T finally had a playoff game. If it was in Toronto or elsewhere, I might travel to go see it, to be honest with you, because it'd be that exciting. So I hope that this is the guy that can turn the program around. I've got not my hopes high, but I'm just excited. I'm excited they might actually do something.
Yeah. Maybe this, I can't remember the Vanier Cup year it was, but maybe they finally get back there and win one. I remember they played against the Dinos and they blocked a field goal at the last second to win the game. So they're trying to get back to prominence, and hopefully this is it for them. I mean, I don't have a favorite college team per se, but I will adopt them because my buddy Josh cheers for them.
Yeah. And just for the record, that Vanier Cup they won against Calgary, that was 1993. Yeah. 93. That was the year the Jays won their last World Series. That's how long – Joe Carter's home run was just before they won that. So that should tell you exactly how long it's been. That's a long
time. Yeah, it's a long, long time. A lot of bad years.
Yeah, it has been. But what's not been bad has been getting back in the booth, Mike, and talking to you again. This was a lot of fun kicking the rust off, kicking off the new year, right?
You have a booth?
You have a booth? I have a makeshift booth. I sit in a closet, if you will, and soundproof it so no one can bug.
You know, we did a couple episodes late December, and we were only off for a couple of weeks, but it still seems a little strange when Monday comes around and we're not recording. So it is great to be back.
It sure is indeed. So that's the episode for this week. As always, remember, you can subscribe to our show on Apple Podcasts, as well as find us on Google Play and Stitcher. And you can go over to 3downnation.com and listen to the show or download over there. And as always, you can hit us up on social media. Late last year, we started a show Twitter and Instagram account, which we've been fairly active on. I think we've been more active on Instagram than we even have on Twitter, which was a surprise
to me because
I hate taking pictures and I'm terrible at it. But you can find us on both of those platforms at Podski WeeWee. And of course, we have our own personal accounts where you can hit us up, questions, comments. You can tell Mike how stupid he is for some of his takes. You can tell me how stupid I am for just existing, but you can find us on there. So Mike, let them know where they can harass you, please.
@Mike_Ticats.
And you can call me all the names in the world over at @JoshSmith_82. And, of course, you can always throw those comments and questions our way in the Three Down Nation comment section. And, of course, do not forget that you can pick yourself up some Podski Weeby merch over at our store, shop.spreadshirt.ca/Podski Weeby. We're going to have some new items available in the coming days. One that we were planning on that might not be going up now because of certain news that just came out today, but there's going to be some new stuff up there. So please go over there, buy some stuff, and send us pictures when you do. I've got a couple. We post them on our Instagram. We share them on Twitter. Show us that you're wearing some Podski Weeby stuff because we always love to interact with our fans. So, Mike, that was episode 99. Next time we do this, we're at 100. Crazy. Do you ever think we get to 100 episodes?
Honestly, I didn't even think about it when we started. Like, I had hoped, but man, that's a lot of episodes just talking football. It's been great, though.
It sure has. So that was the 99th episode of Podski Weeby. I'm Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham. Eat 'em raw.
Eat 'em raw.
Thanks for listening. Find more great shows like this at CF Pod Network on Twitter.